The Veteran Advocate Podcast is brought to you by Patriot Resume. So if you want to get a new job or if you want to get a promotion within your current job, one of the best ways to be ready for opportunities is by having a resume that's up to date. So resumes can be kind of complicated, and there is a fine art to translating your experience on paper. If you need help with that, Patriot Resume is here to help you. They specialize in non-traditional jobs such as police, firefighters, and especially military veterans. So if you need help, if you want to practice your interview, if you need a polished resume, check out www.patriotresume.com. My guest today is Lauren Price. She runs Veteran Warriors, which is an advocacy group where she goes and takes the federal government toe-to-toe in the political arena. She writes the legislation, which she then presents to congressmen and senators. She is not afraid to go to Washington, D.C., and go knife fight in a phone booth style with politicians. She knows that the only way to ever get things done is by being a upfront advocate in their face, person to person. She has many successes under her belt that she has helped with over the years. She is probably the most passionate person I've ever met when it comes to fighting for veteran rights. And in her interview, you will see that her passion comes through in everything she talks about. I think one of the reasons she's so passionate is because she herself is a veteran from a very long legacy of service to our country, and she's had her own health issues due in part to her military service. She's battled with the VA personally, so she knows what it's like. We talk about why the VA backlog is so big, what can be done about it, and then we talk about issues like burn pits and touch a little bit on like the Johnson Island stuff, which I've talked about before. And that'll come on in probably a different episode. But yeah, she is the person to go to if you have questions about the VA. And if you want to fix the VA, she's the person you need to talk to. So I hope you guys enjoy this one.
For us to get across to Congress is that don't listen to the VA's PR machine, because they literally have huge, almost unlimited dollars to push out propaganda and very slanted, very cherry-picked information. And that's what the general public sees. And if we go around telling everybody the facts and the truth and things, you know, like VA hires doctors whose licenses are suspended, and then they blame the person doing the credentialing. So the person that hired that person is the one that should have never brought that person on board. And the general public, they see organizations, especially like ours, we are not a quote veteran service organization. They see us as, some of the VSOs actually see us as the enemy. And I was told by a former national commander for one of those that they wouldn't work with us because our mission would jeopardize their relationship with VA. And it gave me pause, because that's what I've had private citizens tell me, that, well, all you do is, you know, complain endlessly and loudly about the VA. You don't do anything to fix it. Well, matter of fact, we do. We spend tens of thousands of dollars every year out of our own pockets to try to convince Congress to listen to the veterans rather than the veteran service organizations or the VA, and take what they're saying to heart rather than, oh, they're just a disgruntled vet, or they're just dissatisfied. No, nothing will make that person happy. There's an old saying, you have 50 people telling you to drop, sit down before you fall down. And when we can't convince the public, we get told, you get free health care. Yeah, if you were in a third world country, you'd probably be about fine with me. This health care is not world class. This health care is not the gold standard. The administrative side of the VA is fraught with corruption and nepotism, and just pick an adjective of dysfunctional bureaucracy. And we're told we're the ones that are making the mistake. And after 10 years, no one's going to convince me differently that what I see and what our membership sees and what many Americans do see is that the VA is broken and needs to be completely overhauled from stem to stern.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would even be in favor of abolishing the Veterans Administration altogether and sending 100% of our troops out on the civilian market. Now, I understand keeping maybe a small element of the VA to administer the benefits, but as far as the healthcare is concerned, you're absolutely right. When I compare the quality of healthcare from the Veterans Administration to that of my civilian doctors, I'd say the VA is maybe 50% as good on their best day.
I went to VA. I retired in 2009. And I was already being treated at VA because I was being med boarded and under what is now called the IDES program. I was doing that simultaneous med board and VA claim process. And from 2009 until I left their care in 2012, I fought, and I mean aggressively fought for healthcare for my terminal lung condition, which was that was the straw that broke the camel's back, was when the fellow for combat pulmonary exposure, that was his title, told me that my lung biopsy and three concurring diagnoses from three separate facilities that didn't know each other, that it was all in my head and it was my PTSD. And when, and I quote, when my PTSD is cured, I could come back and he would consider treating me. I left, literally, that was the last time I was in a VA facility for my own care. I have a laundry list of severe health conditions. And I have a dream team of civilian providers now. And the very first appointment I had with my primary care doctor, when we walked through this maze of medicine I have, he said, I promise you, I'm gonna do everything in my power to keep you alive. If I can help it, you will not die on my watch. I'm still with that guy 10 years later. There's no way that I would consider going back to VA when I couldn't get a doctor's appointment for 9 months. I couldn't get an eye appointment for 15. I couldn't get in to see the PTSD treating psychologist at all. I was told that I had to go through an orientation, which I'd already had. And well, you need to do it again. And you have to have a referral. When I asked for the women's clinic, you have to have a referral from your primary care doctor. How is it that I know more about what the protocols are, what the policies are, what the directives say when it comes to getting mental health care at VA, getting into the women's clinic at VA? How come I know that better? I'm not getting paid high five figures and low six figures just to be sitting there answering the phone. But that is why we do what we do, and we do it the way we do it. Because that's the kind of nonsense that people are told every single day. You have to have a referral from your primary care doctor to go to mental health. And the current secretary and the two previous secretaries before them all reiterated that there is no requirement to go through your primary. You don't have to go through anybody. If you call them up today, you say, I'm a veteran. Here's my social security number. I need to see mental health today. They're supposed to open the doors, welcome you with open arms. And yet to this very day, I'm not exaggerating, 15 cases right now that these are veterans that cannot get in to see mental health, and not because of anything they've done. This crap should not be happening.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You are 100% correct, you know, and so I have so many questions about why you think that is, but I think it's also kind of important to kind of to give the backstory about your organization and you specifically. So you run Veteran Warriors, where you advocate for veterans to get their rights and their benefits. And on top of that, you also lobby the government itself to make changes within the VA. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, completely accurate.
Okay. Great. So, but you were also a veteran yourself. So I think it would help to explain kind of your passion for helping veterans if you would just take just a minute or two and just kind of tell your story of how you got started in this line of work.
Well, I am a Navy combat vet. I served 10 years in the Navy. I got medically retired. Technically, my last day of active duty was 2009, and it took them a while to finish the paperwork. But my husband is a retired Navy senior chief, also a combat veteran. My oldest son and wife are both Air Force veterans, and they both served over 9/11. My son was a crew chief on a flight after 9/11. My middle son is a combat injured veteran from Afghanistan. My youngest son served with Tenth Mountain in the cleaning up of Sadr City, and then was at 22 years old, put in charge of Basra when the Brits left, and saw half his squad killed. My father did 32 years in the military, 7 in the Marines. And when they wouldn't let him keep on being a drill sergeant, he went over to the Army, where they let him remain a drill sergeant for the next 25 years. My grandfather served 21 years in the Navy as a first on the USS Constellation that is in Inner Harbor right now in Baltimore. And then when subs were built, my grandfather went over to the first sub fleet. My family has served this country going back to General Simon Kenton, who served under General Washington. My husband's family is just as long-standing service in the military. So when I started getting out and I started having these absolutely insane issues with something as basic as getting a medical appointment, I didn't enlist till I was 39. And so I had a career in the federal court system before I enlisted as a paralegal. So I'm like anal retentive paperwork queen. I did my own claim, what is now called a fully developed claim. Everything was finished. Every record was included. And even gave them the courtesy of doing the breakdown of what the rating schedule said everything was supposed to be, including using their non-pyramiding processes and policies. 5 years, 4 appeals, 2 congressional inquiries, and finally calling in this very secret little office in Washington to a very nasty guy who's very rude. But it turns out he has as much power as the secretary, because the 2 days after I called him, they finally got my claim finished. And during this odyssey, I met veterans who waiting 4 years for a power chair because VA told him he could have it. They prescribed it for him. But the people that are responsible to get it for him were so incompetent that they couldn't understand why a 350-pound man could not be pushed around in a manual wheelchair by a woman that is 4'9" and weighs 100 pounds. I saw claims that were going through and being rejected. Claims where veterans have lost limbs, where they had perforating traumatic brain injuries. Never mind things like me, where you've got partial amputations on both hands. Terminal lung condition I contracted in Iraq, and a host of other cool things that you can't see real well. I served 13 months in Iraq as a convoy driver. I went there to go do Rule of Law as a paralegal. And I got there and they're like, yeah, they laughed in my face. They're like, yeah, we don't have court systems. This is 2007. Sorry, we have no court systems here. You're just going to go drive convoy. I was the lead convoy driver for our battalion and the trainer. And I have 350 missions in 13 months. I brought every one of my convoy team home, upright, handed them back complete to their family. But we all, a lot of us, ended up with very, very, very severe illnesses. We've had people from our unit that have died from cancer, that have severe lung conditions like my own. Never mind the, you know, the parting gift from any service over there over the last 10 years is, here's your nice healthy dose of PTSD. And every time somebody files a claim with VA, and they get back this thing that says, we don't believe you. Or, I'm sorry, you didn't file your DD-214. Or any of this other random dumb stuff that comes out of the Veterans Benefits Administration, I'm past shaking my head now. Now I start cursing because, and here's a little secret to share with your listeners. Whenever somebody gets out of the military, as you get your DD-214, you actually look on the bottom of it. Five, count them, five copies of it go to the Department of Veterans Affairs. Five. And within 30 days, your entire personnel file and medical record are sent to the VA. They don't stay with your branch. They are sent to St. Louis, to the archives, to VA. So every single time the VA tells somebody, we don't have your record, we've never heard of you, you got to give us a, you know, fourth copy of your DD-214. Everybody should get just a little more pissed off because the processes are in place. But VA is, they're an oligarch. They have more money than they ever need. They have autonomy. Because the only person in this country that can force the VA into doing something differently is the president. Because it's a cabinet position. So that he, while the secretary has to consider what Congress says and has to abide by what laws they set down, if they don't, there's zero repercussion. And the only repercussion is if POTUS gets involved. He needs to put his boot squarely in the rear of the secretary if he wants things to change. And until we can make that happen, I'm going to continue to push the giant boulder uphill with Congress and try to get the American public to understand that this is the most overpaid and underworked organization in the nation. And our veterans are screwed. I agree with you partially on, I don't think abolishing the VA is a cure. I really don't. We worked with Concerned Veterans America for 2.5 years on this. Hold on, I have to turn off my headset. All right, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, my headset was going dead. So when we worked on that reform package, it was a compromise amongst all of us, and there was a very large number of organizations working on it. Because like you, some people want it gone. As you know from the last few years, a lot of people are terrified of privatizing the VA. I know that the VA polytrauma unit and some of the specialty areas where VA is exclusive to, the perforating head injuries, and they work with the Verne Center at Fort Sam Houston. There are some things that are combat related injuries that VA still owns the battle space on. The problem is that when you're talking about hypertension, diabetes, even lung conditions, because VA could care less if we have a lung condition, I assure you. They only know how to treat asthma, and even that they do poorly. They just throw a bunch of inhalers at you and tell you have a nice life. That's it. They don't look for a cause. But I think we need VA to be solely taking care of those, and I'm gonna throw it out, those who've won the battle. Quite literally, they're good at, I'm not gonna say great, they're good at taking care of war injuries. They're horrible at construction management. They are horrible at providing mental health care. They are absolutely atrocious at providing care for female veterans. It's abysmal. And I happen to have acquaintances and friends who utilize public health system, meaning through Medicaid and things like that. And I assure you, I've watched for 10 years what their system looks like. And it's on a par with what the generalized healthcare VA is. Do I think veterans could, we could take the money that for the generalized healthcare, for the optical and the dental and the, you have high blood pressure, you have hypertension, you have diabetes, you have all these other things. We can literally put a V on your Social Security account and that money is earmarked solely for veterans healthcare. And let the private sector pick up the slack, because they already are. That's what community care came from. It started off as fee basis and turns morphed into community care. But the private sector has been picking up the slack for 20 years. So let's pay them at Medicare rates. Let's take away the financial management of that money from VA, because they suck at that too. And then we also shut down the things like, oh, they're going to handle their own construction management. Wrong answer, folks. Audit any one of their construction projects and you will find abysmal financial management and oversight of any construction project. Let's take away from them handling anything to do with a veteran's competency, the fiduciary program, where they have this rampant problem with hiring people who are convicted felons to manage a veteran's money. And then stand around and go, oh, I'm sorry, after that felon takes all the veterans' money and the veteran's left homeless. Or they're deciding that a veteran's mentally incompetent without even telling them. Or based on some crap, and I'm true story, this really happens, they spied on the veteran through social media and decided to put through the paperwork to deem them incompetent for the VA purposes. They love to tell everybody it's only for that. In the civilian world, a judge has to determine that, and there will be psychiatrists and your family and everybody else involved. At VA, you don't even get to sit through the hearing. They should not be doing this. They're horrible at it. Yet nobody believes me or tells me that I'm exaggerating or, you know, I'm downplaying the good things about VA. I dare them to show me the good things about VA that I have not already mentioned. Oh, like, let's see, research, medical research, their medical research into lung conditions. They're just now, pay attention to this one, kids in the back of the room, just now conducting a research study on the effects of toxic exposures on the lungs. I've been sick since 2007. Thanks for joining the party, VA. This is the kind of nonsense we've been dealing with, and this is why we're going to keep doing this.
No, you're spot on. You know, I think any veteran who's been to the VA has probably experienced some or all of the things you've mentioned. I know of my own personal experience has been not ideal. You know, I go in for an annual physical and it takes about 30 seconds. You know, my doctor lightly touches my knees, lightly touches my neck, and that's it. She's like, okay, you're healthy, you know, and like, I'm like, okay, if you say so. Yeah, it's kind of a joke in some ways. There are a couple things that they maybe do well, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know what those would be because I really haven't experienced those. And as far as, you know, the veterans' complaints about, you know, paperwork and bureaucracy, you know, when I filed a claim, I filed it online at eBenefits. A year passed before I kind of got tired of waiting, and I hit the little button that says request a decision now. So I hit that button. Within a week, I got a notification saying I have to go in and do all my exams, and about 2 weeks later, denied. And then I resubmitted the same thing through a VSO, and about 1 month later, it was approved. So the eBenefits platform is kind of a systematic way of denying veterans benefits. And a lot of people don't know that, and that's unfortunate, but it's an education thing. You know, if you go through a VSO, you have I don't know if it's double or triple the chance of succeeding at submitting a claim than you do if you have it on your own. But they push everybody to eBenefits for some reason, and I can only suspect that they do that because it's an easy way to deny claims.
Well, I have one better for you. Because our organization handles a wide variety, basically everything soup to nuts for VA. And so it depends on what's at issue at the moment, because it's like whack-a-mole. You know, we hit this mole and we start to make some traits, gain some ground there, and then another thing pops up. And we don't go after or get involved with, to be frank with you, we don't get involved with helping veterans with their claims. We are actually working on, one of our members is going to become a claims agent and going to be able to assist veterans, not with filing their claims per se, but more of like helping them make sure they have a fully developed claim, make sure that the wickets don't get missed, so that the veteran, and educate the veteran themselves so they know what they're doing and they know what they're looking for. But couple years ago, well, about 5 years ago now, during the height of, and some remember it, some don't, civilians don't know anything about it, there was this giant claims backlog. And when I say giant, I mean a million claims in backlog. Meaning, at that rate, at that time, and this VA even admit, for them to actually, in the current method that they utilize, that process, it would take them 7 years to just get through all those claims. And that's if no other claims came in. 7 years. Yet they have every resource and every conceivable dollar and gadget and whirligig you could imagine to do this job. Well, we really dug into this. And what we did was we looked at it's called process mapping. We looked at their process, because what changed? Something happened, and don't give me this crap that it was the surge, because it was. That was 170,000. That wasn't, you know, a million more veterans coming out of the system. It was 170,000. That's a blip to VA. So it wasn't the surge. And actually, the backlog started before the surge ended. We had to go back and look where the break happened. And what we discovered was in 2010, the union that represents the rating examiners and all the VBA employees basically went to VA and said, our membership is standing around stomping their feet, whining, and holding their breath because they're not getting enough performance awards. That's bonuses. They're not getting enough. So here's what we come up with. What we want VA to do is utilize this new method of processing claims. It's not a new method. It's actually a method that's been around for about 40 years in the collection industry. And in collections, the numbers matter. That's all that matters in collections is numbers.
And when we computers came into play with collection industry, they had what was called keystroking. That collectors were rated on their work, not just on the dollars they brought in, but on how many accounts they actually hit every day. So this keystroking technique, actually, they developed algorithms to count the keystrokes of the collectors. And the VA agreed with the union and said, and I quote, this was from former Undersecretary Hickey, "We and certain stakeholders have developed this new method, and we believe this is the best possible way to do this." From that point to now, they are still using that. From that point to now, they cannot, will not ever be able to remove the backlog. And when they realized that they weren't going to be able to fix the backlog, they, and I can show you exactly where it happened because we tracked all of it. We pulled all their data, not our own, theirs, and showed Congress. Oh, look, right here's where the break happened, where they changed their process. Oh, and look right here, when they decided to develop what was called rating bundles, meaning they and these certain stakeholders got together and decided which were the claims that they were going to publicly discuss. You know, when the media sticks a camera in their face or sends through a request for a comment, these are the claim numbers they talk about. They freely admit they publish all of them. But if you go look at what is a chicken noodle on rye for what passes for their rating numbers, you have to know how to read this. Well, fortunately for Veteran Warriors, we have a whole bunch of data geeks. We have the guys with the glasses with the tape in the middle that sit there and do this. And what we came up with was they said, oh, we're going to have, we have 10 piles of dirty laundry. We're only going to publicly discuss two. What they had was 13, and they decided to only talk about 9 because the other 4 that they weren't discussing were the ones that weren't changing at all. They were just growing by leaps and bounds. And what we predicted then, what we told Congress, what I testified at Congress about, was VA is going to be allowed to continue to do this. And as long as you let them continue to do this, what you're going to have is the claim numbers will come down. The appeal numbers are going to go through the roof. And lo and behold, appeals are now backlogged 7 years. 7 years. Because the way the process of keystroking was a collector, a rating examiner, would open the claim, send a letter, close the claim, and move on to the next one. She touched, you know, 50 claims that day. They were denied. It's very easy to open a claim and deny it for things like you didn't send your DD-214, or there's not enough medical evidence, or we don't believe you, or despite the fact that our doctors think you're half dead, yeah, you're not service connected for that injury. That's what's happened, and that's where we are right now. And the backlog on claims is just going to skyrocket until somebody yanks a giant monkey knot in somebody's rear end.
Yeah, so to make sure I fully understand, so they get paid performance bonuses on how many claims they touch, so they open them up very quickly, deny them very quickly without giving them a very thorough look, and that adds to their personal numbers, which adds them to bonus. It decreases the number of backlog, but they're not actually giving it any real exploration or any real analysis. They're just kind of denying just to get the numbers down and their personal numbers up.
Seth, you get the gold star for the day. But here's the thing. It's not even that they don't do enough or a deep dive on a claim. They actually separated claims into what they call lanes. The express lane. And if you really want to get some good giggles, watch my testimony. It's on our website, the congressional testimony, about this very subject. The express lane is you have one or two things you filed before you got out. You filed a fully developed claim through a VSO, and you only have one or two claimed issues that are apparent and overtly documented. Those go through with lightning speed of 2 to 3 years. If you have three or more, they call those complex claims. And to this day, no one at VA has been able to answer the question of, well, what if you have three, but all three are like catastrophic injuries? If you have this terminal lung disease and you have congestive heart failure and you have lesions on your brain, and the look on their faces, they're just horrified. They're like, oh my God, yeah, that's really, yes, that's a complex claim. Well, no, that's like beyond complex. Well, their answer is essentially complex claims are the ones that they give to experienced rating examiners and they get to work on them. The issue though is, and I've seen this firsthand, well, we're going to work on your claim. So once a year, they will send out a letter that says, thank you for your patience and we're working on your claim. We'll get back to you. And it can sit there and sit there and sit there. And unless you have a member of Congress who's got a really big mouth, or you have a lot of attention of the press, your claim's just going to sit there. And when you grow so frustrated because you can't work, you're physically damaged, you cannot work, but yet they gave you a 10% rating up front that you've appealed and been on appeal for 5 years over, you've lost your house, you've lost your car, you are couch hopping or living with family on their good graces. Any self-esteem you had is long gone because all your shit got taken away from you and you're basically impoverished. And then the VA says, denied. Or better yet, the VA says, denied, and we don't believe you. We don't believe that you have a missing leg. True story. We handled a case like that. They told the guy they didn't believe his leg was missing. Just when they tell you this, and they literally, you're waiting and you're at the bitter edge. And then we have veterans who go over that edge. And veterans who will deliberately take their own lives on VA property. Former Secretary McDonald made a statement that I will probably never forgive him for. He said something to the effect, I'm paraphrasing, after a veteran committed suicide on VA property, that veterans are doing that because they know VA will take care of them. And I'm not prone to violence. I really am not. I have a big mouth, but I'm not prone to violence. It took a lot of self-restraint not to want to just walk up and slap that man in his face. Because the reason veterans go to the VA and commit suicide is they were, number one, already a mental health risk. And number two, they feel like the VA dropped the ball on them, on healthcare, on their claims. Their everything in their world went to crap. And the only agency in the country that is supposed to help them, it's actually written into 38 CFR that they are required to help the veteran, that they don't. They turn them away for mental health. They turn them away for physical health. Then they deny their claims. And VA blames the veteran. It's the veteran's decision to do that. Absolutely, it is. But these factors are contributing, and VA needs to own that instead of putting the onus back on the veteran.
Yeah.
Because the veteran's not making that mess, they are.
So I work a lot with homeless veterans here in Wichita, Kansas, through an organization called Passageways. Anybody who's listening to the show knows me talk about them all the time. I know of two veterans that have been through the Passageways program for homeless rehabilitation. And we recently went up for a grant through the city and they gave their testimony to the city because the city did not want to give them the grant. But one guy's testimony was that he went and sought assistance from the VA because they have a program that will help people with homelessness. So he was going to be homeless within 24 hours. And he went to the VA, and the VA said, okay, have you been homeless for 48 hours? And he said, no, I'm going to be homeless tomorrow if I don't get some kind of help. I need somewhere to go. I need something. And they said, okay, we'll come back after you've been homeless for 48 hours. And he said, okay. So he came back after he had been homeless for 48 hours. And he showed up to the same office, showed up to the same people. And they said, okay, well, you know, we have to file the paperwork and this, that, and the other, and that could take a couple of weeks. So he's been homeless for 48 hours before he can even file the paperwork. And then the paperwork takes time to run through the widgets. So by this time, you know, he's been homeless for like 3 weeks. So he comes back for his follow-up appointment and the office is closed. And then he comes back another time and they tell him, okay, well, yeah, we'll set your appointment up to speak with the agent or whoever it was that was administering this. Can you come back next Thursday? Right. So by this time, you know, how much time has passed? This guy has been homeless with his children living in his car. And at that point, you know, he seriously contemplated slitting his wrists in the parking lot. The same exact story verbatim happened to another guy, and he had a gun in his mouth in the parking lot. And these are the types of things that the VA does to people. So you take somebody who's already having a hard time, somebody who's already had major life experiences that led them to have something like PTSD or depression or anxiety, and then you throw gas on that fire with the bureaucracy, right? We all know the government is not a nimble organization, but the VA takes it to the extreme with their delaying and their denying and their red tape. And if anybody should have an express lane, it should be the veterans, right? And they do the opposite. They put them through more crap and more BS than any other population on the planet, you know? And that just makes every issue they already have 100 times worse.
Oh, we handled a case in Atlanta, a female veteran with 2 toddlers and had, and zero comments, please, on the fact that she had literally just been released from the hospital where she'd had a miscarriage with her 3rd child. And she was homeless with her 2 children. They were living in her pickup truck, not even a car, a pickup truck, a single cab pickup truck. So every night she would try to find a place to park that was safe. And she would take the car seats and put them in the back of the truck, regardless of the weather, and try to sleep with the 2 children. Basically, she made little beds on the floorboards for the children, and she slept across the bench seat. We got involved, actually, because another advocate reached out to us. And I managed to, through some very, very nimble gymnastics, able to get some our release documents signed by her and returned to us. And I immediately started calling VA. And I, you know, I'm used to their bureaucracy. I hate it, but I'm used to it and I know how to deal with it. So I just keep playing the stupid game and I'm calling and I get, oh, well, I'm not the right person. Okay. And you know, after about the 12th person I talked to, I'm like, listen, now I call to the director's office of the facility. I'm like, listen, you stay on the line and go find whoever it is that I need to talk to, because I'm not going to keep making calls and being told I'm talking to the wrong person. I said, and then this person's so incompetent, they can't even transfer me to that person. They transfer me into their own voicemail or some other dumb crap. The director's office said, sure thing, no problem. They do transfer me to, it's the homeless veterans office. And this obnoxious, horrific woman, I have her name. Trust me, I know who she is. but I won't release it because unfortunately we were not able to get her fired. She was the nastiest human I'd spoken to in a long time. And she told me, number one, yeah, she met that girl and that little thing, you know, maybe if she quit getting spreading her legs, she wouldn't have to worry about being homeless. I said, ma'am, that's not relevant to the conversation. The conversation is she's 100% permanent total, and she has two small children, toddlers, and she's just been released from a hospital. They're living in their car. Well, that's not my problem. Hold on, wait 1 second. What was your freaking job again? You're the coordinator for the homeless program? Yeah, as a matter of fact, it is your job. It is exactly your problem. So what do I need to do short of me getting, because I'm only 6 hours from Atlanta, short of me getting in my truck and driving to Atlanta and sitting in your office and being a pain in your ass until this happened, what do I need to do? Well, how long has she been homeless? I said, well, like 5 days now since she got released from the hospital. Well, she has to be, hear me when I say this. She has to be homeless for 2 years. 2 years before we will help her. I had to put the woman on mute. I really did. Because a slew of words that would make the sec def's hair curl came out of my mouth. I got back on the phone with this woman. I'm like, listen, maybe you don't understand the situation. She goes, no, I understand you. She's homeless with two kids. Our policy is for us to give her rental assistance to help her get into an apartment. She has to be homeless for 2 years. I said, okay, let's just say, what other things could you do? Help her to get off the street with these children. Well, we've expired all of our benefits for the, it's like the transient program where they give them a voucher for a hotel or something. What do you mean you've expired them? You guys don't have to worry about that. Well, yes, we do, because it's funded by grants. I lost my mind. I read the VA budget every year. Your budget is not funded by grants. Well, you know, but there's only a limited amount of money. I was like, she needs a hotel room. Well, we can't help her. I hung up the phone. And my organization, we virtually passed the hat. We reached out to other organizations and people I know that have some deeper pockets, because Veteran Warriors does not do fundraising. We have done a handful of fundraisers in 10 years, and they were always for something really big and all for veterans. We don't do this to support ourselves. And we got her into a hotel room. We got her into a hotel room where the night before, because I don't know Atlanta, the night before the room she's in was the scene of a murder. A prostitute was murdered in that room the night before. And I explicitly had told the front desk that we needed a room with two beds or a bed and a pullout couch or something. They gave us one room with one full-size bed and a chair. And when a guy with a gun knocked on her door because he saw her walk in there alone with two children, we had to pull her out of there at 11 o'clock at night. And we got her safe. We got her to a safe place. We got her into a kind of by-the-week place. And we finally connected her up with some civilian resources that, as you now know, that's where the VA takes the bow. Every time they take the bow for the heavy lifting that the private sector is doing. Here's my, and I know we got to start winding up here, but here's my one thing that I want to tell every single American. Back in the 80s, some of us are old enough to remember this, President Reagan came on TV. Because 7 years earlier, a grassroots organization had stood up and started doing what we're doing, but it was about the Internal Revenue. And their thing was that the Internal Revenue at that point actually could come and kick your doors in, kick you and your family out of your house, take your furniture, their clothing, your house, everything. They wanted the IRS overhauled so that they could no longer walk in and act like Gestapo. And it finally happened. It took them 7 years, and they overhauled the IRS. And the president signed it, and he said, today we will have a kinder, gentler Internal Revenue Service. The Department of Veterans Affairs has the second largest budget in the federal government. They are the only agency that is not 100% audited from stem to stern. And they are also the only agency that 70% of the VA's work, their mission, whether it's healthcare or benefits or funeral affairs or construction, 70% of their entire workload is passed off to the private sector. Social Security, Medicare, and Department of Defense do not hand over all of their work to the private sector and still demand more money and cry poor mouth to Congress while patting themselves on the back for that private sector's work. When we have private sector organizations that are literally carrying the load for homeless veterans, and VA stands up and takes a bow for that, I want to throw something at my TV. Because it's small organizations and it's small ones like Pathways. And there's a guy, his name is Michael. He is actively boots on ground working on trying to stop veteran suicide. There are a bunch of them out there, Ellsworth Williams and Battle Buddy and Warrior Point. And these organizations are literally boots on ground. And yet the VA stands up and talks about how what they're doing to combat veteran suicide. And it makes my skin crawl. And those of us that are on the ground, we know, we all know, but we're the redheaded stepchildren. We are not included in the big discussions in Washington. We're not included in the dog and pony show every April when all the VSOs traipse through Congress with their, no bullshit, giving a full briefing on what their accomplishments for the last year were and what their missions are for the next year. That happens every April. We're not included in the big conversations because they don't want to hear this. They don't want to hear the VA is miserably failing at its job. And we are literally funding that fire. We are paying to watch Rome burn. And getting the public to understand, getting the American public, the men and women who vote, to say, we will not put up with this any longer. We will audit the VA. We want to know where every penny goes. We demand accountability. We did a survey, a study of 5 years. One of our staff pulled 5 years of OIG investigations. 5 years. Every single one. To the report, every one of them cited a need for more oversight and more training as the root causes for things like, a doctor in Kansas, by the way, who raped his patients, who when one of the patients came forward and filed a complaint with the federal police, they moved him to another state. Because Kansas, the state of Kansas, hands were tied because he was working for the VA. Fortunately,
What city was that in?
That was in Kansas. And they moved him to another state that actually didn't have those kind of laws. And when he did it in the next state, he was arrested. Because we started tracking his little nasty butt and made sure that the state officials knew when he arrived. The VA pats itself on the back for mediocrity. They invent terms to congratulate themselves, world class. That term actually doesn't have, it's not a benchmark by any standard. You know, innovative, we're gonna have new initiatives. If I hear the word initiative one more time, I'm gonna gag. They don't have anything new. They can't find one collective new thought amongst the 330,000 employees. They reward bad behavior. They highly reward bad, really bad behavior. Nobody gets fired. And they don't. They don't get fired. When on the rare, and I say extremely rare occasions, when a VA employee goes to jail, it's not because VA pressed charges. It is because outside authorities, state or federal, get involved and say, this person's going to jail, whether you guys like it or not. And I speak from firsthand experience. We have worked on a case that's 4.5 years old, that the evidence would literally bury this person. This is a veteran and his wife who have defrauded the VA out of literally probably close to $1 million now. Four separate federal agencies got involved and got together and decided to file a complaint with the FBI to make them do one big investigation. And the FBI, the first time, they said, well, yeah, we're just going to work it out. Don't worry about it. And then it came around again. And the next agent that got it said, hey, this sucks. We need to prosecute these people. And of course, the VA was actually the agency that had the most skin in the game. The VA refuses to prosecute that veteran. And I quote, because we don't want to give the VA a black eye. I have a newsflash for them. They look like a train wreck already. One more black eye is not going to matter. But yet that veteran and his wife are still to this day defrauding the VA. But the VA knows it, so I guess it's okay now.
Yeah, that's crazy. You know, and anybody who's worked in the government knows how all of this is possible and how all of this is not only possible, but common. You know, I personally know many people who have done all of the things you've mentioned inside the military. And it's because that within the government, you lose the accountability that the civilian world offers. In the civilian world, you do not do any of those things, you will get fired very quickly. And it's because in the civilian world, you have to turn profit. And if you interfere with the ability to turn profit, then you're gone. But in the government, you do not turn profit. You only expend taxes dollars, right? So there is the crutch. There's no incentive for regulation. There's no incentive for efficiency and quality of healthcare, because frankly, if you provide poor healthcare and that veteran dies, well, you just reduced an expense. I'm sorry to say, but that's really the nature of the beast, and that sucks.
You hit the nail on the head, Seth. Yeah. That mediocrity, I mean, within government bureaucracy anyway, the less people that they have to deal with, whether they just piss us off or refuse to care for us like they did with me, or they actually kill the veteran or drive them to take their own lives, it's just one less veteran they got to deal with. And it's the part that I guess bothers me more than anything is that if they just owned it, you know, I'd probably have some more respect for the secretary and for the leadership people that work within the VA. If they just stand out here and say, look, we know we suck, but we're the only game you have and you can't do anything to us. Our union contracts protect our employees. They're not there to protect the general public or the veteran. They will be taken care of. These employees will always get their bonuses, they will get their promotions, and you can't do anything about it. And if they just stand up and own that, I'd probably have more respect for them. But we have been chipping away at this for 10 years. And there are things that I think we're making headway in. The toxic exposure world, as you well know, 10 years ago, I started my mission of making sure everybody understood how bad this was. I have constrictive bronchiolitis. It's a terminal, irreparable disease that they can't even treat. Even the standard treatments for lung conditions don't work, and some of them actually make the condition worse. I've buried far too many friends and their family members who have succumbed to bizarre, rare illnesses, and they only got them solely because they went and served overseas. And because having grown up in a military family, I know firsthand what the radiation did to our soldiers. What I know firsthand what mustard gas did. I know firsthand what Agent Orange has done. And my comment to VA is, when they tell us they don't find any causal links, and I want to say, and I probably shouldn't say this on air, it's pull your head out of your fourth point of contact, because if you actually could read beyond a fourth grade level, you would actually see causal links everywhere. And my favorite thing to tell people is they have this disease called, it's called chloracne. The only known cause of chloracne is dioxin exposure from Agent Orange. And if you got it and you served in Vietnam, it's called a presumptive. They presume that you're rated, and that's it. They give you the rating for it. If you got that from serving in Kuwait, Djibouti, Afghanistan, Iraq, Qatar, anywhere, guess what? They say, well, that's too bad, because we're going to assume that you're lying, or that, you know, the four doctors you've gone to are all incompetent. And we don't force that issue. I'm part of a task force, as you know, Seth, that this task force has been for 2 years trying to build legislation and public awareness about toxic exposure. And one of the key things that's really difficult to get this group to discuss is the fact that DOD is the world's biggest polluter, most prevalent, and has the, by tonnage, has the most that they are polluting. And people think it's only overseas. Therefore, the American citizens say, well, you know, I feel bad for the veterans and the soldiers, but, you know, it doesn't affect me. So they need to actually check their state. Actually, they could go to CSPIRE's website, because CSPIRE's got a beautiful, constantly updated database where it shows every location in the U.S. where the federal government, and particularly DOD and Department of Energy, are open-air burning toxic crap. We have three right here in Florida. And I want to thank the people from CSPIRE for making us aware of this, because even after 10 years, I still didn't know that. And all it did was piss me off even more, because now the American public walks around saying, well, I feel bad for you. Like, hey, go look in your backyard.
Yeah, so absolutely. You know, that's a follow-on conversation I want to have with those guys and maybe you. I have a feeling that, you know, you and I probably have a lot more to discuss on individual topics. But what I'd like to do is just leave that door open for you to come on and discuss things such as burn pits and, you know, dioxin, because those are whole nother issues that we could get into. And, you know, we could spend an entire day talking about those. But
I could wrap up the world in conversations about toxic exposures.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I've done my own research, but, you know, I know we're coming up on time here, and I know you're busy, but I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about the issues. And I want to make this an open dialogue. You know, I want this to be, you know, a regular thing for us, because there's not enough people talking about these issues, and the world needs to know.
Absolutely. And we feel the exact same way. Anybody that wants to reach out to us, you can go to veteran-warriors.org. You can find all our points of contact, our social media contacts through there. You can contact us directly through the website. Our phone number and everything are on there. We don't just focus on toxic exposure. We focus on anything related to the VA. And we're starting to actually delve into some DOD stuff, because now we have an ambassador. Her job is going to be solely being that liaison between DOD and VA. So we can actually now help people with some DOD side stuff, active duty stuff. So your listeners can reach out to us anytime if they need more information.
Well, hey, appreciate that. And I'm sure that they will, you know, as this thing builds themes, you know, we got to build a kind of a coalition, like you mentioned in one of our previous conversations, you know, just to keep this thing going and to keep the momentum alive and don't let people forget about it. So thank you so much. And I hope you have an awesome week.
Thank you again, Seth. I really appreciate you having me and being able to spend some time talking to me. And I hope your week goes great too.
All right. Take care. Goodbye.
Take care. Bye.